I got changed. I can do a lot of things. But Will and I sometimes aren't on the same
page.
If I had a gavel, I'd beat it. So I'm going to use Andrew's. Welcome. Good to see you all here. Good to see you all chatting with each other. Things must be going well with your budget. Anyway, thank you all for being here. Let's get started. The first item is to have us introduce each other, so as if we don't know who we are. But I'm Tom Dolan, Mayor of Sandy. I'm currently serving as chair of this committee. So.
Mike Hollow, Ogden City, and vice chair.
I'm Cullimore, Cutman Heights.
Carlton Christensen, with Salt Lake County, representing Mayor McCown.
Michael Jensen, Salt Lake County.
Brian Black, Brooklyn Vision, Utah.
Mary Olson, WFRC.
Denise Davenport,
with WFRC staff.
Ted Dalton, WFRC staff.
Kylie
New,
WFRC staff.
Julie
Durham,
WFRC
staff.
Jory Donner, WFRC staff.
Bob Stevenson, Lake of Cities.
Karen Cronin,
Rich
City,
Boscombe
County.
Cameron Dill, with the Utah League of Cities and Towns.
Shane Marshall, Utah.
Fran Marshall, Francis City.
Jerry Benson, UTA.
Tammy Long, South River City.
Joanne
Savini,
Midvale City.
Andrew Gruber, WFRC.
Start back here.
I'm Ned Hacker with the WFRC staff.
Barry McLaren, Tom Schulman, and Neil Office.
What's the WFRC staff?
Robin Hutchinson, Salt Lake City Transportation.
Chuck Iskey, Sandy City.
Pat Sewell, Utah Transit Authority.
Felix Smith, WFRC staff.
Terry Edwards, North Salt Lake City.
Andrew
Bonhold, AECOM. Richard Mandel, Federal Highway. Russell Weeks, Salt Lake City Council staff.
Charles Anthony, you got?
Thank
you, Council. Thank you, Dr. Moore.
Job Castle, Council staff. Sam Boone, with the Salt Lake Council of Government, Sam Boone, with the first staff. Thomas
Baumgartner,
Council staff. Governor Huerta, WFRC, current staff, yeah.
David Roy, WFRC.
Yes, everybody. Thank you so much for all you come today. And thank you, Andrew, for having a good staff.
You're welcome.
The number one. We just had that discussion. It's up to his staff to make him look good, so I can look good. On our consent agenda, do we have a motion for the consent agenda?
Motion, we approve the consent agenda.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Moving to the chairman's report, I guess that would be me.
Don't we need a financial statement first?
That's part of the consent calendar.
The two, one A and B, are both on the consent agenda. Do you want to talk about them separately?
No, I don't want to talk about them.
Come on.
No.
We'd like to get into another budget discussion. The first item is a major event that's coming up that we have an opportunity to support and help with, and that is the 50th annual conference of the National Associations of Regional Councils. We're encouraging you to be involved in that, and the Wasatch Choice 2050 Consortium But if I could ask you to help financially support this, we would like to make a really good impression on the regional councils from around the nation that will be here. Sandy City is committed, my arm still hurts, but $3,000. And if you could contribute some form of financial assistance to help us put on a really good show for that, that would be terrific. So we'd encourage you to help support the event. And please attend if you can.
Why do you want us to say that?
Just send it to me personally.
John Dolan from
America.
Mayor, the real answer to that question is that Muriel Sochamil will give you a little more information about that.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, Mario.
Just 1 second. Salt Lake just gave $5,000.
And was it to Sandy?
It's T-O-M-P-O-L.
And turn my back for a minute.
Anyway, sorry, I'm sure Andrew's hit you up for this anyway.
Yes.
Have you?
As have you.
Oh, did I?
I'm working on it.
Okay. Okay, service awards. Let's get serious because we have some employees that, we'd like to recognize from our staff. And Andrew's going to introduce them.
So I thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Just before I do that, can I mention briefly one thing? You see there are some incredibly dedicated county elected officials that are here today. But there is a, compared to usual, there's a dearth of county elected officials. And the reason for that is because there is a UAC, I'm sorry, a NACO, National Association of County Officials, Western Regional Meeting that's happening in Jackson Hole. So some of our members took the tough duty of going to Jackson Hole to represent our region. So all of them asked to be excused from the meeting, which we, you know, reluctantly agreed to. So I just wanted to make that note.
And you know what happens if you're not here. So they've all committed to supporting you.
I thought that was a factor in allocating project funding. No, just kidding. Okay, so I have, there's two employees that I want to recognize, only one of whom is here at the moment, so I'm going to save the other one for later. Scott Festen, Scott, raise your hand. And I got to say, this is one of my favorite things that I get to do, is recognize our terrific staff for their contributions. Scott Festen is celebrating, and we are celebrating, 20 years of service with WFRC. He is responsible for the lead person for something that is core, technical, but core to all of the work that we do in our agency and working with you. And that is making forecasts for population, employment, growth, where are people going to be living in the future? And it's an art and it's a science. And by being able to understand and make those predictions underlies the technical information that underlies all of the planning that we do. So there's a lot of analysis in cooperation with all of you, thinking about growth trends. What do you want to have happen? What does the future hold for us? And then integrating that information in a highly technical and specialized way into all of our modeling and our planning. And Scott's an expert in this area, among other things. We couldn't do what we do without him. He also led the development of our interactive regional transportation plan map. So he's a technical whiz. He has a degree in geography from University of Utah, a master's in geography from UNC Charlotte, and he and his wife, Wendy, have one daughter who's about to graduate from high school this year. And so, members, I would appreciate it if you join me in thanking Scott for his 20 years. And I've got one more who just snuck in just in time. She was actually making a presentation at the Urban Land Institute talking about a lot of the important work that we do. Julia Collins, raise your hand, Julia, is celebrating 5 years of service. So she started just a little bit after I did and has been doing great work ever since. When she first started, she was helped to manage our
Wasatch Choice 2040 Sustainable Communities Initiative. Remember, our region got $5 million from HUD, DOT, and EPA to implement Wasatch Choice 2040, build tools, and she helped to manage that. And then we said, you know what, you're doing such a great job. We've been asked by our regional growth committee to create a new program, the Transportation and Land Use Connection, so that we can turn that vision into reality at the local level using those tools. So in cooperation with Salt Lake County, we created this program, and it's on its third year. We're going to be talking about it, but Julia is the program manager for that program. Julia has a master's in city and metropolitan planning from the University of Utah, a bachelor's degree from Hobart and William Smith Colleges. She's a planning commissioner for Summit County, and she's also an avid mountain biker and outdoors person. And so join me in thanking Julia and recognizing her. Let's do a quick photo. Scott usually takes a picture. Who's taking a picture? Anybody? Anybody? Here, Scott. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can you stand up and help with this?
Oh, hi.
So, here you go.
Thank you.
Scott.
Here you go.
Very nice, Frank. Okay.
One, two. Cut.
Okay,
Joanne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You
can't do that.
What? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sure you're in that photo.
Let me tell you, I appreciate Andrew for recognizing the employees. We don't normally get a chance to intermingle with all the employees that much. And I know how significant in my city that employee recognition is. And say it's a way to say thank you, and we recognize and appreciate you. So we want to keep doing those kinds of things. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Next topic, I'm going to turn some time over to Jerry Benson to discuss and explain some of the approach to the open meetings law that they're working with right now. I've decided there is a cottage thing that's just a whole career that people are trying to make on beating up UTA. So, obviously, they don't get to see what we see and how they really do try to provide great public transportation for us. So, Jerry, go ahead and take the time.
Thanks, Mayor. I'm sure you're all sick of hearing about UTA, but I really appreciate the opportunity today to speak for just a minute with our key stakeholders about UTA's approach to its meetings, board meetings, and openness, transparency, and accountability. So, as you know, starting in May, we began a new process of holding board meetings, and we just had the first of those last night. But before we could even get to that, we stepped into a controversy with the media that was really premature and you know, from our point of view, inaccurate and unfair, because it focused on the committees. There will be changes to our board committees, and there were some challenges that we had with those. And Commissioner Milburn serves on our board and can speak to this, but one of the challenges was we were using the committees to do a lot of things. We have a large board, 16-member board. One of the things is to communicate and involve the board members, to communicate with and involve them. Another thing we were doing in the committees is we were delegating decision-making to be more efficient. And then we were also having public access in the committee meetings. And frankly, we found that they don't really work the way they were structured to do all of those things. So we're in the process of revamping that. But along the way, we kind of got into this storm about open versus closed meetings. And most of you received a message this week from our board chairman clarifying that all of our meetings will be open meetings. We still have work to do to sort out the committee structure and the way that our board is going to work together to make its board meetings effective. But the changes that we did make in the board meeting, what we saw last night, were really positive. So we advertised all of the action items in advance. We posted them on Thursday before our Wednesday board meeting. We had over 300 people view that information. We did take public comment at the meeting, and we found that the public comment was more informed because they had the opportunity to see and review and study the issues in advance. So I will say that some of the things that we've started are working, and we're learning from that, and we will have to adjust. One of the things that we learned from last night's meeting is it's probably not enough time to take public comment and then set up an issue for a decision right after that. So that's one of the tweaks we're going to make, is to try to back that up so there's more time for deliberation after public comment instead of final decision. We also learned that when we have traveling board meetings, it makes it inconvenient for people, but that was part of our process, was to allow people to comment by email and then have that comment considered in front of the whole board. So what I will say is that the changes we have started are having a positive effect. We had more substantive and meaningful public input because of this work, and we have more to go. We're going to move toward live streaming of the board meetings, and we're going to continue to refine the process that the board has to study and vet issues in advance of them coming to the board. So I just want to say that our commitment to openness, transparency, and trust has not taken a turn, but we got a little fouled up along the way as we're trying to make changes, and so we're sorting through that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about it. I just want you to know we just started this change. Last night was the first meeting. We're not done, and we're already going to make refinements based on what we learned from this meeting, but it's all about more effective board process, better communication with the public, and better engagement of the public on issues that affect them. That's what we're trying to do. And you all know around this table just how challenging that is in a community that most of the time they don't care about your issues, but once in a while they care a great deal, and so they need to have a way to get plugged into your process.
Does anyone have questions with Jerry? Okay, seeing them.
I was going to say, yeah. I really appreciate Jerry. He's doing a very good job.
All of you raise fees every year. That's interesting to me, of some sort or kind. It's interesting to me that it required an article in the media that you raise your fees from $5 to $15 to recoup the cost of work that has to go into that. So it just tells me that, as I said, the cottage industry is just surrounding this UTA thing. It's just so I think it is incumbent upon us to. All I can tell you is that I've been around more than a year or two, and the working relationships that we have today are so superior to what they were years ago. I personally appreciate that working relationship, and it is much more transparent. So anyway, I'll shut up now. Any public comment? We'll open it to public comment. So it's just us and staff. Close public comment. Move on. Budget committee. We'll be hearing from. We'll be doing a public hearing and action on the adoption of the 2017 budget unified work plan. Councilman Jensen will lead us in that. He is our guru of budget.
Don't know about that, but thanks, Mr. Chairman. So if you remember back to March, we did a draft budget. We did the draft of the Unified Planning Work Program. So we sent that out to all the COGs, put it out for public review. There have been no changes to that. Now, in the Unified Planning Work Program, UTA did make some technical changes, just some definitions, just updated some program things that they're going to do over the next few years. But nothing really substantive changed in either document. So are there any questions? Do we need to go back over the budget? You guys felt comfortable with it, I'm hoping. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, what I would do is I would make a motion to open a public hearing to take comments relating to the FY 2017 budget and Unified Planning Work Program.
I'll second that motion.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Now we'll open it up for public comment. Wait for the same people to get there.
Mr. Chair, seeing no public comment, I would make a motion to close the public hearing and adopt the budget and the Unified Planning Work Program.
You have a second?
FY 17.
All in favor?
Aye.
Go ahead.
That concludes the business of the budget.
Mr. Chairman, may I just briefly first thank the members of the Budget Committee for working on this, and also Lovett, where's Lovett Baumgartner, our CFO, who does a great job making sure all of our books are clean and transparent. Having said that, I just want to offer personally my time and Lovett's time. If any of the members of the Council ever have any
desire to dig in more detail into any of the information, we would be more than happy to visit with you personally and go over anything you want. That's a standing offer on this or anything, really. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item 5, Regional Growth Committee. Mayor Cronin will help us on that today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have one item to discuss today, and that is item 5A, the Wasatch Choice 2050 Vision and Regional Transportation Plan Goals. You know, the RGC acts as the steering committee for the development of the Regional Transportation Plan. And, of course, with the full, the UFRC Council makes the decisions regarding the RGC. Starting with our council meeting, last council meeting, we began discussing the regional goals for the Wasatch Front. And today, Ted is going to introduce a working draft of those goals for discussion. Part of the agenda is also a report of what's happened in the 10 small area meetings that have just been concluded this week. So, with that, I'm going to ask Ted.
Thank you, Mayor Cronin. Good afternoon. Mayor Cronin mentioned this, but two key things that I will cover in this agenda item, results from the 10 small area meetings, and then to discuss a set of, a working set of shared goals for the region. We are in the midst of the Wasatch Choice 2050 process, which is simultaneously an update to the Wasatch Choice for 2040 vision and the development of the Regional Transportation Plan. And it's a general time frame here is that this year we gather ideas, and that's through primarily the small area meetings, establish goals, and we're talking about that today. Next year we do work of exploring scenarios, desired realistic futures, and refine and select components from that build toward a shared regional framework that includes transportation, that includes development patterns and open space concepts as well. And then in 2019, the transportation plan would come forward for adoption, the Wasatch Choice 2050 would come forward for adoption, local conversations might continue, and then implementation resources would also be addressed. So kind of a general thumbnail sketch of the process looking forward. When we talk about a framework, again, the notion here is that it's a framework. The Wasatch Choice 2050 is a framework for both regional transportation, regional open space concepts, and also development patterns, all three of those pieces working together. Okay, so again, and we've done this now for the last cycle, the last development of the Regional Transportation Plan, and now this one, we have built them through intensive conversations among a small group of cities, unincorporated areas, and county officials, which we think is a really terrific way to do this. So we had 10 of these smaller meetings and ended up with 154 participants, and you can get a sense of what the geographies of these smaller meetings have been. You might look for your community and think, yeah, okay, I know those communities pretty well. So on the one hand, it was a locally specific, but big enough that it was exploring regional transportation, open space, and growth dynamics as well. And we really love to do the small area meetings. Now, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some of the results, interspersed with many of the same kinds of growth trends that we shared with the participants in these small area meetings. So, for example, housing. Housing mix, this is what we have existing today in the WFRC overall area, 72% single-family homes, 8% duplex, 17% multifamily, and the like. And so we asked the question, well, what makes sense looking ahead in terms of general approaches with regard to housing? We also mapped those ideas out. But we shared this kind of information. This is from the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, where where we summarized it by major age cohorts that relate to the kinds of housing that we would see in demand, right? And so here's a snapshot of today: green 19 to 35 new home buyers, the yellows and oranges in their is probably spending the most of their life on housing. Blues and purples, more downsizing. And so if you look at today versus 2050, getting in your time machine and looking at the size of those cohorts in 2050, if you subtract the two, that's what this pie chart is here. And so among other things, we had interesting conversations about, well, if the growth is 47% in a downsizing population, what are those kinds of implications for us, both within the small area as well as regionally? And so I want to show you, we asked this question, with regard to the mix of available housing looking ahead, this area should offer, and then we had these different options, a much greater percentage of attached homes or multi-unit homes, mostly single family, but a greater percentage of attached homes or multi-unit, about the same mix as today, or a greater percentage of detached single family homes. And this is the aggregate results from the 10 small area meetings. And unless there are questions, I'm going to just keep plowing through these. There's three sets. This is the first set of these kinds of trade-off questions. Here is data that I think you will find interesting, and a brief mention. All of this data is available on our website, both for each small area, with data for each small area, as well as regionally. This shows you the when development occurred, okay? So if it was between 1900 and 1920, it was blues, and then as it gets closer to today, it turns more orange and red. Now, what you're looking at, this is the southern end of eastbound I-215. This is kind of the middle part of the Salt Lake Valley. And here's part of the interesting story that we saw and talked about, which is that this is speckled. It's actually a speckled pattern of development, ladies and gentlemen. So we have an intermixing of development from right after World War II, interspersed with a lot of little specks of infill and redevelopment. And in fact, we looked at data of the 5 years from 2004 to 2009, and Salt Lake, the Salt Lake, four county Salt Lake metro area, including Utah County, had more infill and redevelopment than Phoenix, Denver, Sacramento, cities that are bigger than us and that we count as our peers. And you know as well as I do that that dynamic has only increased. And so we had this question that we posed to the participants with regard to how growth relates to infill and redevelopment. And we asked this question, should growth occur more like Vision B or A, and then options in between. Vision B was little growth occurs on vacant land, most occurs in existing commercial areas, and the opposite end of the spectrum, all growth occurs on undeveloped land, existing commercial areas stay the same, and then gradients in between. And again, the length of the blue bars relates to the percentage of respondents in those 10 small area meetings and how they approach these kinds of questions. These approach questions, again, are useful for us as staff as we reflect what we heard in the 10 small areas. And we look to the next year, remember, which is about developing desirable and plausible scenarios looking ahead. And this is the third trade-off question that we asked with regard to land use in general. And this is how just these categories, the percentage of the land in our WFRC territory is being utilized today. And one of the things that we focused in on is the commercial. Brief, but I think telling anecdote that apparently just recently Amazon started to sell more clothes online than Macy's does. Okay? And so the question at hand was and is, what happens to the retail land in our communities? Does it stay as it is? Does it start to change and transition into other uses? And we wanted to take that question to the participants at the small area meetings. So we asked this basic question, what should happen to retail areas over time with these options? Housing becomes more mixed, it becomes housing mixed with retail more. The market picks the uses, not sure what happens, but let's be flexible. Maintain them for retail or more warehousing and light industrial, which as online sales grow, we expect to see an increase in those kinds of land uses demand. And you can see this strong finding again from across the 10 a smaller area region. So that's, those are interesting kind of approach questions to how the future unfolds that we ask. And again, we also did a mapping exercise where participants explored ideas for change with communities adjacent to them. Any questions about these results before I keep moving forward? Carlton?
So I was noticing back on probably your second slide or maybe third, when you were looking at your population age groups that were growing the most, the clear shift was the 65 and older. I would sort of guess that that group wouldn't be traveling maybe as much as peak time demand. Do you factor that in and sort of your capacity equations? And I'm guessing you're smart enough to do that, but
we do make assumptions for today and interim years all the way up to 2050 about the age composition of our region, and that does affect the mode choice decisions that are part of our travel model. Okay, now with regard to the question about our regional goals, we brought some desired outcome statements asking this question: as you think about the health of your small area, again, you know, a handful of cities and unincorporated areas, what outcomes are important, most important for this area? We recognized, and the whole group that came recognized, that all 10 of these are very important. We only asked for what are your top three. And you can read the list, and I won't read it to be merciful, you know, trying to avoid death by PowerPoint. But let's take a look. This is the results then, the composite results, again, of all 10 small area meetings. And again, remember, they only got a chance to pick their top three. And so I think it's not as statistically valid. It's not as good an indication of prioritization as you move down the list. But these top three or four are a very good indication. We saw these come up in meeting after meeting. The number one is quality job opportunities within a reasonable commute, the availability of water, fiscally self-sufficient communities, in a tie with manageable traffic conditions on the roads, and then the fifth one was air quality. So just trying to get a sense of what really is a motivating factor for the people that came to these smaller meetings that we will then... Did you have a comment?
Just that you may remember that at the last council meeting, we actually used you as guinea pigs and brought this list here and talked about it and did keypad polling and then took it out to the staff and city council and planning commissioners and several of you that participated in those meetings, the 10 meetings around the region, and then that, this is where those results came out.
I'm curious, was our results similar to these when we did it? Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, Ted, wasn't, I mean, the number one was the number one just consistently across the region, right?
Yes, but your results as a council, that number one was also your number one.
No, does MAG do anything similar to what we do on this?
With regard to goal development?
Yeah, like having these polling. Have they ever done anything?
I am not sure if they have done that. And we own a set of keypad polling devices, and so we love you, so
they do a goal setting process.
Right.
The approach that they use, I think, differs somewhat from us. But they're also thinking about, for their smaller geography, principally Utah County, what are the most important demands? And if I may, part of the reason that we go out to small areas, sub portions of the region, is even though we're developing a regional transportation plan, we are not thinking that one size fits all. So it's really important to hear from each of the parts of the whole community what are the most important issues in that portion of the community. So we can reflect those differing inputs in as we go forward and develop scenarios. But I do think it's noteworthy that just consistently this notion of a reasonable commute to quality job opportunities just stood out as a theme that relates to transportation and economy all across the entire region.
Yeah, just to briefly reiterate, the point of this exercise was the
differences and understanding the differences in one part versus the other. We just thought an average would be useful for you to be aware of.
I just find it, before you move on,
yeah.
This is a side note, but I find number two fascinating.
Right.
Because without water, wherever you're at in the state of Utah, that's going to drive development. And with the legislature having to deal long-term with water, the difference between rates and then property tax is going to be interesting, how that balance is going to play out over the next few years. So my questions were mainly about two, and how it interrelated that. So.
Briefly, water is something that we've heard from RGC in the recent past that they would like to have WFRC understand those implications better. So it's consistent with that as well. And so now into the goals discussion, which relates to those keypad polling questions we just looked at. One thing to note, in the last cycle, we had actually two different goal statement goal lists that were both adopted by council. We had a set for Wasatch Choice 2040, and we had a set for the Regional Transportation Plan. I'm not going to show them to you. And so this cycle, the concept here is to integrate these efforts. So therefore, one set of goals. We assume and anticipate that the goals would inform all of WFRC's actions, not just the Regional Transportation Plan, also our TIF, and in other words, how we program infrastructure funding. And then it might also be, because Wasatch Choice 2050, the concept there is a shared vision, that it would also be useful for anybody that shares that vision. And so necessarily you'll see this list, this draft list will be a pretty broad list. And that we also use that list of goals to track our region's progress on an ongoing basis. This is the list of draft goals. These are in your packet. And what this chart shows you is how they relate theme by theme with past goal statements that we've had. Wasatch Choice 2040, the last RTP goals, MAP 21, which is our slash FAST Act, which is our federal transportation authorization legislation. It's like a limerick. You say that a couple times fast. And then also goal statements from UDOT and UTA that we obviously work very closely with and value that ongoing partnership. And so we looked at this list compared to each of those different sources. Green means there is some similarity and overlap. And again, just to mention that Wasatch Choice 2050 is purposefully about more than transportation, land use as well as open space as well. And so here is that list again. And I will briefly read it, but not in a dramatic way. Not a dramatic reading. I'll just read it. Economic opportunities accessible within a reasonable commute, livable and healthy communities, manageable and reliable traffic conditions, quality transportation choices, safe streets for all anticipated users, good air quality, a range of housing choices and a low cost of living, ample parks, open spaces, and recreational opportunities, a sustainable natural environment, and efficient infrastructure in a state of good repair. And as you're thinking about that, I just want to note a couple of things about this. One, it does build on the feedback that we got from council when we did the keypad polling last time. We also had a good in-depth discussion. I think we actually heard from every member of RGC just last week, and this does reflect the RGC's comments. And so, Mr. Chair, I just want to open this up to see if we are on the right track. Are we getting at what is most important in our region? And I think that I just wanted to also, there it is. I'll go back to this, I'm sorry. I'll go back to it, but this is the way we framed these goals, that residents across the region benefit from the following outcomes. They are outcome statements, and they are culled. They are filtered based on this sentence. They can meaningfully be affected by WFRC, its member communities and partners. Now, the reason for that statement is
There are things that are not on this list that do matter a lot to Utahns, and we know they do. Education, healthcare. But we don't have those on the list with an understanding that they're probably not things that can meaningfully be affected by local government, our members, you, and the agencies that serve you, WFRC, as well as UDOT and UTA, and perhaps other partners of Wasatch Choice 2050. So I failed to mention that preamble. But with that preamble, any thoughts or comments on this list of goal statements that you have at this time?
Yes. Chair? 7 and 8. Those are great goals. I support them fully. They seem to be a very local land use authority decision. Shouldn't the broader vision support local land use? These teams should want to drive local land use decisions.
The role that Wasatch Choice 2040 has served over time is to be a shared vision both for local governments between themselves as well as with regional organizations. And so it's absolutely part of the role is to be useful for local government. That's the way Wasatch Choice 2040 was originally built and how it will be built this time is from the grassroots as a local conversation. I don't know if that helps with your...
Can I supplement that a little bit? That our organization does not have, nor do we want to have, land use authority. Okay? However, the development patterns in our region, and we all know this, right? The development patterns in our region, the transportation needs in our region, relate to impact and are impacted by land use. So the notion, I think, of having them on the list is to explicitly acknowledge that as we're developing transportation plans, we have to be considering and working with the local communities, the cities and counties, in building those transportation plans. So I appreciate the question. It's not a matter of we're driving it. It's a matter of having that conversation and make sure that those things are recognized in the development of transportation plans.
That I 100% agree with you.
Okay.
That the plan should recognize and support those decisions that local planners are making. Shouldn't those two things say that then? Shouldn't it say one of the goals is to support the decision making of the local planning school? I'm not one of them.
Right.
So I'm just chucking it out there. Mm-hmm.
Thoughts around the table?
Yeah. Just a thought, too, as we look at some of those are funding driven. And I'm wondering how much those goals from residential or the groups we've surveyed would be embracing them if they know there's a price tag to fill those goals. Do I look at level, like quality transportation choices, safe streets are all going to require funding. So
right.
The
yeah.
question is, do we need to have some way of putting together how we're going to fund? It's going to come with a price tag, and it's good on paper, and it's good, it's wonderful, and it's warm and fuzzy, but what's the people we surveyed embracing of those things if they know that it may require a tax increase or it's going to require money?
Right, you bet. And one thing to note is this cost-benefit goal is critically important. And trying to think through, well, how do we achieve these goals but do it in a very cost-effective way? That's partly built into number 10 about efficiency, efficient infrastructure. But I think that for me, that's one of the core rationales for doing something like Wasatch Choice 2050, is to think through if there is a close and well-coordinated relationship between development decisions and transportation, maybe it helps enable more people to travel on foot or by bike or by transit or drive shorter distances, and maybe we can get to more of these objectives because we don't have to spend quite as much money for mobility. I think that's part of the rationale. Whether or not these goal statements do exactly what you think that they should do, we can. This is a total draft, and so we can adjust.
I want to, first of all, recognize Senator Adams and Commissioner Wilbur who joined us. But, Senator, you had a comment?
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand. Sorry, going back to Shane's comment. Are you saying on 7 and 8 that we should encourage and support, because Wasatch Front may not actually do that? Is that, it's not having them on the list that you have a question about. It's just the fact that we don't want to give the impression that we're the regional planners.
I realize these are served goals, so I don't, but if you're doing some analysis in whether or not it's achieving the goal, a reasonable commute, like if it's commute to a 500,000 square foot tilt-up warehouse, that reasonable commute might be 20 minutes.
Right.
If it's to a town center where there's office or some kind of employment or near transit, that ought to be more like 10. You know, I'm just wondering, how do you sort of break out those economic opportunities based on those opportunities?
We talked about, and this came up in the RGC meeting, and we talked about taking these more general desired outcome statements and then translating them into more specific objectives that are measurable,
okay.
And moving forward on that basis.
I have a question
part of it here is, I think, semantics. We're talking about the word goals, that I see these more as guiding principles. And these are guiding principles for what we're trying to implement. Because to say our goal is good air quality, I think that's true. But some would say, well, if you build more streets and accommodate more vehicles, are you accomplishing that goal? Well, within reason, we are within that context. Same thing with a sustainable natural environment compared to quality transportation choices. You've got natural conflicts there,
sure,
that are always going to be encountered. We deal with that all the time when we announce a new development in Cottonwood Heights. People opposed always throw comments out of our general plan to say, well, but your general plan says this or this. It says yes, but it also says this over here. And so they're guiding principles as opposed to the goals that we're trying to achieve. So I don't know how important the word goal is here. It might be that what we're talking about are guiding principles that are going to help us to attain the objectives that you're talking about underlying things.
I have a question for the members of the commission and the council. If you're doing with 7 and 8, I'm looking at the practical side. Do you have master plans I'll use master plans as an example, of developing a range of housing, cost of living, and do you have your open space and parks master plans now? We did ours about in the 90s. But it really helped us a lot. And then the legislature in the late 90s put it on us to do more low-income housing. Many cities responded to that at that time. And I see that emphasis coming back through the legislative process. But y'all have those, or are you working on those?
Well, I think every city is supposed to have a general plan.
Yeah,
every general plan has a section for housing, and every general plan has a section for parks and recreation. So to that extent, every city should have it. Now, if it goes back to the 90s, or whether it's a current
We update it every 5 years. But
yeah.
It sure helped a lot. Again, how are your residents accepting multifamily?
That's what I go through. And I know that other communities are maybe a little more different, but you bring up an apartment complex or something, and I realize I live in a different valley, but they're opposed to it. I mean,
the negatives.
Yeah, you can't get past all the negatives to jump to a positive.
But if we're looking at what's been presented here, with 47% of the population in the future going to be downsizing, what does that mean? They're going to cut their house in half and run out from another side. I mean, it just tells you that it's. I personally think it's incumbent upon us to lead our communities to that. And therefore, we've got 2,800 units under construction right now. So anyway, it's that balance that we need to convince our residents of. Ted, do you have any more?
No, that's everything.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just thank you. This is great discussion, and we appreciate all of it. I just want to note, as a process element, this is not a final action. What we're doing here is we've had this feedback in the region, and then we're going to continue over the next few months working with our partners, getting public input, and I think, Ted, correct me if I'm wrong, the idea is that we come back in August, the August council meeting, actually for adoption, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we would consider this, I mean, with this helpful feedback, are they goals, are they aspirations or principles, and are there ways for us to clarify that maybe we're not doing all these things, we're not responsible for all these things, but they represent a common aspiration or vision that we consider all of these things as we exercise our responsibilities. So this feedback, I mean, I think this feedback has been really healthy. Jory just reminded me of one thing, and that is that not everybody was able to actually participate in those small area meetings, and you or others may have had thoughts about these things since then. We actually, you should have gotten an email from Andrea today. I think the emails went out to all the participants saying, hey, here's another opportunity for additional feedback. We're looking for that. So if you or your staff want to comment more, look and dig into the maps that Ted said are online, we would welcome and appreciate that.
Thank you.
Ted, you're going to send us the slide.
I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll move on to item 6, Transportation Committee. Mayor Cullimore is going to give us a report.
A substitute for Mayor Appelgarth is at a granddaughter's graduation or something. We'd like to kind of combine 6A and 6B. 6A, as everyone is aware, we approve a TIP every year, and that TIP gets amended, seems like, every meeting. We decided a year or so ago, that instead of bringing all those TIP amendments to the Wasatch Front meeting, that we would delegate some of that to Transcom. And Transcom did, in April, approve an amendment. I'm going to ask Ben, when he does his presentation on 6B, just to highlight what was in that one, because we don't need to go over it. And you can just talk about the 3 or 4 projects that were in that. And then we have another modification that Ben is going to present today that has 3 updates, as well as an approval of the state to projects that need to be added to the TIP. So for A and B, I'm going to ask Ben to go ahead and give us that presentation, and then we'll move on to item C.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mayor. So in your packet, as the Mayor mentioned, there is a copy of the signed resolution, and that signed resolution has 2 tables identified or connected to it. On those tables, it lists the projects. The first table has 3 projects that were amended in. They were payment rehabilitation and preservation type projects, as well as there was improvements to signs and barriers. And then there was also a project on the last page there that combined some rehabilitation projects. If there's not a need to, or if there's questions, go through them individually, or we can move on to the board modification for you today.
Unless there's questions about what Transcom did, many, some of you are on that committee, unless you have questions about these, and since it's already been approved by Transcom, I would suggest if you do have questions, just see Ben afterwards, and he can answer any specifics on it. We appreciate that. Being done, so why don't we go on to the...
Thank you. So, today we have a board modification for the Transportation Improvement Program, and this is for the existing 2016-2021 Transportation Improvement Program. There is also a table prior to the resolution, or attached to the resolution, that identifies the modification to the TIP that's being requested and proposed. There are three projects as part of this board modification. We'll go through each one of those individually. The first project is a project up in Davis County. This is a Caseville project. This is a request from Region 1 to add a new transportation alternatives project to the existing transportation improvement program. This is a project that was just recently approved by Transcom and is part of the draft list for the Regional Council in the Transportation Alternatives Program. This particular project is listed right here. This is 200 North in Caseville. This is a new development of the Smith Store, and this is the DNRG rail trail. The question, or the project, concerns the crossing right here. At this particular crossing, the existing rail trail comes up and diagonally crosses 200 North. But this is the entrance, the main entrance for the new Smith's development that's over here with a lot of other stores. The proposal of this project, or what the city wants to do with this project, is to realign where the DNRG crosses 200 North, taking it straight across, and also right here installing a pedestrian crossing signal. This is a significant safety issue and concern. If you can look back at the other one, when cars are coming out of here to make a right turn, the corner clearance, there's also some geographical elevation differences here. The site difference is poor, and people coming in to making a left turn into the parking lot sometimes are not aware of someone coming across or using the DNRG. So by straightening this project across the facility and putting in a signal there, they'll be able to control the motor vehicles as well as improve the safety for those that are using the trail. The amount of the funds remains the same. The intent is to amend it into the existing TIP so that the project or the city can go ahead and advance construct the project. Then once these funds become a part of the approved transportation improvement program, they can be reimbursed with those federal funds. But it needs to be part of an existing program to enable us to do the federal aid agreement. The next project, attached to the table there, is a list of the state-funded programs. Now, the state-funded programs are amended into the existing Transportation Improvement Program every year in May. This is prior to the state fiscal year, which begins on July 1st. This program includes funding levels for operation and safety programs, system preservation programs, the region contingency funds, and the regional concept development. I might point out right here under the payment preservation and rehabilitation, there's a $40 million amount here. Those amount of funds come as a result of the good work that was performed of the recently approved motor fuel tax, resulting in the approval of House Bill 362. But this particular program improves quite a bit of stuff that's included throughout our transportation system that's not necessarily part of an individual project, but needs to be amended into the existing program as listed. Then the last project is a project on the 9th South, or SR 270 Connector Bridge. This is the Connector Bridge right here. And the intent of this project is to add some additional funds. This project was actually advertised earlier this year, but the bids came in over the engineer's estimate. So the action is to amend this project by an additional $900,000, and the scope of this project will replace the deck on one structure, rehabilitate the structures on five other structures, and address the deck overlays on four additional structures. These funds come from the unprogrammed bridge preservation program. And that would include all the projects that are part of this board modification.
Any questions for Ben on those projects? If not, Chair, I'm going to entertain a motion on this particular action item.
Okay.
Make a motion to approve the amendment.
We have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Ben. We're going to move on to item 6C. As everyone is aware, one of the great benefits of Wasatch Front Regional Council is its ability to deploy federal funds from different pots of money for benefit at the local level. We also have, we have three programs that do that, the SDP program, the CMAC program, and the TAP funds, all of which are beneficial to us. In addition to that, we have a local program that we like very much. It's a joint program between Salt Lake County and Wasatch Front Regional Council, referred to as the TLC program. I think that's a great acronym for this particular program, the TLC program. And we felt like it would be beneficial to review a few of the projects associated with this, these funding sources. We're going to start first with Julia, who's going to talk to us a little bit about the TLC program and some of the great benefits that local entities are receiving from that, and remind all of us of this source of revenue that can be a benefit to your communities.
Thank you for that fantastic introduction. That was perfect. And thank you for the opportunity, I guess, to go first. In your packet today is the recipient of the 2016 Transportation and Land Use Connection funding. Yes, there
looks
you are.
Like this. In your packet.
Thank you. And I've mentioned this is a joint partnership with Salt Lake County, UTA, and UDOT. And just a little bit of an overview of those 12 funded projects. We had 32 applications come in for the 2016 round. We had 23 unique local governments applying for funding, and the end result was the 12 projects, which we think is the best round of projects yet. Ranging from small area plans, active transportation master plans, transportation plans, and they're not just vision. These are projects that are looking at how do we really move the needle? How do we really accomplish everything that we said the goals of the program are? We're looking at establishing a vision, a plan, looking at the existing markets, and ultimately an end result with an implementation action plan, ordinance work, something that really gives that plan momentum to move forward. So this program is exciting, it's taking traction, and as we enter the third year of funding, we're just excited to continue moving forward. And I'm going to turn the time over to Carlton if you want to talk a little about what this means to Salt Lake County and the program and partnership.
First of all, I want to compliment Julia and the rest and the WFRC team who have partnered with us. From the onset of the creation of the office that I have the privilege of representing in 2013, both the mayor and the council gave us the charge that amongst our other duties, we wanted to implement the outcome of the Sustainable Communities Grant and the work in the Wasatch Choice for 2040 vision. And to not only to have a planning effort, if you will, but to enable communities to actually start to implement some of those principles. And we recognize the need to take those principles and take it down to a local level at certain focal points in those communities where you have an overlapping effort of transportation connections, land use, and employment and other opportunities that might exist in a single thing. As we had those conversations with Wasatch Front, and we decided that it was an admirable goal that they wanted to pursue, it was one that we wanted to pursue. It wasn't efficient to make a community, for example, to apply to two different programs, and it wasn't the best utilization of resources. And we were also charged by our council not to add, you know, six staff members or to accomplish something, or even a two or three. And And it enabled us to really, in that partnership, take the resources that Wasatch Front was and enable more communities in Salt Lake County to focus on this effort. As we've evolved into this year's applications, we're really excited about this because each of these recipients have not only caught the vision, but their actual implementations. And I think you go through any one of these, and they're that community's vision to take a key part of their community, utilize the principles, give them some resources to set the stage for the development that follows. And we're starting to see that in one of our very first recipients in South Salt Lake. And we know that some of the other communities are quickly on the heels of that. And as we looked at the numbers that were changing in the demographics, as we looked at some of the housing changes that were taking place. And a couple years ago for the consortium meeting, we had a very well-known lecturer and speaker to town centers, Chris Leinberger, come, and his staff did an assessment of the Salt Lake County area. And based on some very common standards, we only had about half the town centers that a county of our size and region could support in a very effective way. And these aren't multiple mile square areas. It's not like you're taking out a whole residential subdivision. These are maybe, at best, 1 square mile around key areas in these communities where they could refocus, maybe reutilize some of the aging retail land that was not very efficient and the market is shifting away from, for them to take a second look at their community and how to better utilize that. So we're, we're very excited and committed. Our council's been very gracious in continuing that support and effort. And we absolutely want every community to participate. We're glad to see the other communities outside of Salt Lake County, but we're glad that our resources have enabled us to do a little bit more than what we might have done otherwise.
It's a great partnership, and thank you for adding in those comments. So there's 12 projects, and I wish I could pay tribute to all of them, just looking around the room, many of you are recipients of this year or previous years. But we wanted to recognize the Kearns Township project. As this project in particular, the community council and the residents came together understanding that they don't have a master plan. They don't have a long-range vision for the area around 5400 South and 4000 West. And this is an area of big opportunity, looking at the commercial and potential residential and civic uses and what this could mean to the surrounding residents. So this particular project will have include a vision, a master plan, that for both land use and transportation. It will include key transportation design solutions for a couple identified projects, and it will also result in an implementation action plan that will have both financial strategies, take into account the existing market, and make recommendations for how they would implement this plan. And Councilman Jensen, if you wanted to take a couple minutes to talk about what this means to Kearns and where this project will go.
So just real quick, those of you that don't know about Kearns, it came from Camp Kearns, so after World War II, is predominantly a residential area, kind of a bedroom community. So they've really never had a civic center, so to speak, in Kearns. Always been unincorporated. The county's had to provide the municipal services and the planning and zoning and land use for it. So there's that part of the master plan, but they've never really had a civic master plan, a global look at Kearns. And so we have a library over there. We have some other buildings that we're looking at. What do we do long term? Library needs to be rebuilt. We have a UPD substation over there. There's some schools that are getting a little tired. And so we wanted to look at it globally, to look at a possibility of a civic center. And so when this came along, this was perfect for us to look at a global community master plan. And so Kearns is very excited. We're excited. with our townships becoming municipalities now, this is going to be a great opportunity for Kearns to kind of take the reins from Salt Lake County in a year and be able to kind of map out their own future. So we're very excited from the county perspective.
Great, thank you. And as we've learned, these are some of the most challenging areas for growth, but they're also the best places for growth. So we're excited about these projects. Thank you, and I'll turn the time over to Ben.
A little difference from the TLC program, the SDP, the CMAC, and the TAP programs. Today our purpose is to bring to you the projects that have been recommended from Transcom to you to be included into the draft SDP and the CMAC and the TAP programs. You'll recall, and it'll begin again later this year, but about the end of August, when we met as with Regional Council, we identified with them the request that we would be putting out for letters of intent, identifying the programs that we would have available. Those letters of intent were due at the latter part of October. Then we went through and made a request from each of the project sponsors of an eligible project that they prepare a project concept report. Through the months of November, December, and January, the first part of January, they had the opportunities to prepare that. And then we began our evaluation process from about mid-January through the month of March. We're here today because now we've had the draft projects identified. They've come from the technical advisory committees to Transcom. Transcom's reviewed the information and made recommendations, and we're here today to bring those projects to you so that they can be amended or they can be made part of our draft programs. And then we'll begin preparing the draft transportation improvement program and would request that Transcom in June take action to put it out for public review and comment. Then we'll be back to this body in August with any comments we've received requesting for approval of the new new transportation improvement program. And we start all over. So, give you a little background of where we were. So in the Ogden-Layton urban area, we had over 51 projects that were submitted for evaluation. The project total cost was more than $132 million. In the SDP types of programs, there was over $86 million of just the SDP funds requested, not the project cost, but of the federal funds that requested. We had about $12.8 million available for programming. In the CMAC, just under $9 million, and we had about $5 million for programming. In the TAP, about $3.1 plus million in request with $1.2 available for programming. In the Salt Lake area, we had 62 projects that were submitted for evaluation with a project total cost of almost $250 million. These are eligible projects that could be easily funded with these programs. In the SDP funds that were requested, almost $93 million worth of requests for about $25 million in availability. CMAC was just over $20 million for an available pot of funds of just under $6 million, and then in the TAP, $6.8 million requesting against the $2.3 available. So, what we went through is an evaluation process, and that evaluation process is reflected in the tables that you have in your packet. There is a table for each one of the programs. The very first group of tables there that are there is the STP program. The format of the tables are pretty much all the same, with the yellow highlighted project being the project that was recommended, and then over on the left-hand column, you'll see a dark blue-shaded cell with the number in it. That was the amount of funds that were recommended for that particular project. So in the STP program, in the Ogden-Layton area, where we had $12.8 million available to program, there were five projects that are recommended for a total amount of just under that $12.8 million, at $12.7 plus million. In the Salt Lake area, there were nine projects that were recommended for that $25 million in available funds, and we were again just under the $25 million in the program. Now, in the CMAQ tables, format again the same, the yellow projects that are highlighted, those are the projects that were recommended, with the amount of funds per project highlighted in the blue on the left-hand column. We had 10 projects in the Ogden Lake urban area. Out of that $5 million that was available, we over-programmed by a sliver, a little more than $5 million, comfortable that by the time those projects are needing those funds, we'll have some cost savings somewhere, or we'll have growth in the program itself. In the Salt Lake CMAQ, there were 8 projects that were recommended towards that $5.9 million, and we programmed or recommended just under the $5.9 million and the $5.8 plus million being programmed. Then in the Transportation Alternatives Program, now this is quite a colorful chart here, but the yellow are still the ones you want to focus on. Those are the projects being recommended with the recommended amounts highlighted in blue. The amounts we had to program this year were more than what was normal for a couple of reasons. One, we received direction from this body to program 2 years out. With the new approval of FAST Act, we now have a program with some stability. So we're programming 2 years of funds. These amounts would represent 2017 and 2018 money. We also have some money that come back to us that we had set aside for safe routes to school. With the changing in how the programming was being done there, our portion was brought back to the program and they were recommended and programmed. So we had 7 projects in the Ogden Lake area for a little more than the $1.2 million available. And we had 10 projects in the Salt Lake area for a little more than the $2.3 that was available. So, the dots on these two maps represent the distribution of those projects that were recommended, the green being the CMAQ, the blue of the STP, and the TAP programs. So overall, there were 49, I didn't want you to miss that number, 49 projects that were recommended for $52 million. I kind of feel like the price is right. Anyway, but that's not, here's some of the cool details down in the works here on the particular projects that were programmed. And it would address those issues or concerns or components that would address active transportation. The amounts per project for the components on active transportation have increased. Out of the 49 projects, 44 of them have active transportation components in them. Of the amount of funds, of that $53 million, $14.7 million plus are for active transportation components of a project. So when we were widening a facility and we're putting in new shoulders, curb gutter and sidewalks, we take the amount that was identified for the sidewalks and the shoulder improvements, and that's what's helping to contribute in this amount of funds. But here's the neat part. So there was 28% of our funds that were programmed will address active transportation components. So 44 out of the 49 projects. I think that's pretty significant. So today, rather than go through every project that we have listed in there, we wanted to highlight just a few projects and give a little detail and allow the elected officials to have any input they might like. So I'd like to begin by, maybe we'll use the technology of modern technology here and we'll go north. Whoops, that's a little too far north. Well, let's go back here to Perry. Okay, this is in Box Elder. Perry City had a request for 12th West. This is a project that's located right along this corridor right here. Now, it looks like it's a road. This particular facility is. It's a dirt road. It's been used if necessary, but this project would go from essentially 3600 South to right there where Willard is to the south. Now, Willard's portion of road is already, that's just vegetation that's grown over, but to put asphalt on their section, this particular section would construct a 3-lane facility with wide shoulders, three lanes when you're coming up near an intersection, but wide shoulders, curb gutter and sidewalk for bikes where appropriate, leaving some of the spots open for development. With the amount of funds being requested at 2.1 plus million, funds being recommended were the 2.1 plus million. Mayor, anything you'd like to add to this particular project?
This project is so critical. I don't know why, but it seems like the number one place that I-15 shuts down is right there between Willard and Monona South. And a lot of times they redirect all the traffic up into Perry on 89. And inevitably we have accidents there, so it becomes a specific gridlock. And in times past, we've had cars backed up all the way back to Weaver County. So this road right here will provide a critical alternate route when those occurrences happen. And it's also going to help build that spine of the trail that goes, the trail system that goes all the way from Box Elder County down to Utah County. So Willard has got their money, and the two of us will be constructing roadways at the same time to make that critical alternate route.
Well, now if we were to move a little more to the south, and we'll come all the way down to the Ogden area. Ogden, in a request, this is the CMAQ project that they're requesting. They're requesting the location of six kiosks, or six bike stations. Now, a bike station looks similar to this. You have a bike dock, and you have the bicycles. You have a kiosk where these bicycles can be checked out. And they have identified six locations throughout the Central Business District with improvements. All around the area. So the requested amounts for this project was $484,000, and it was recommended that the $451,000 plus be approved for the project, or be recommended. Mayor, anything you would like to add to the project?
Yeah, I'll add a couple of quick thoughts on this. We've all heard Envision Utah talk about some of the issues we have with us doubling our population along the Wasatch Front in the next 30 years, going from 3 million to 6 million. And I had the opportunity to sit on a Governor's Transportation Summit in 2013 in October. We talked about these numbers and all the gloom and doom, and I said, in support of some of these active transportation initiatives and everything else, I'm going to ride my bike to work every single calendar day of 2014 because I wanted to be a, you know, do what you say kind of a guy. And it was a really enlightening event to do that. I rode every day, rain, snow, shine, gloom and night, the whole nine. And it really did bring up a lot of thoughts in my mind about healthy communities. Right now we're working with the Utah League of Cities and Towns on addressing healthier communities. The Lieutenant Governor talks a lot about the spending in the U.S. on health care alone right now is the fifth largest economy in the world, equal to the fifth largest economy in the world. And part of that is because we developed around the automobile almost exclusively, certainly in a city like Ogden when we were built out in the 1940s. And to go back and change the paradigms we've had along the Wasatch Front to start utilizing public transportation or active transportation or the way we develop our downtowns and our workspaces is something we've got to be doing right now. And I think bike share is a real visible way of getting people out, getting them healthier, and letting them feel like they're more ingrained in a part of the community. And so this is very symbolic. It's really important to us. And I would hope, and I'd push UTA a little bit, say, let's do this regionally. You've got a first and a last mile issue that's always a problem here, and a bike share program to cover that gap is by far the lowest hanging fruit in terms of cost per capital build out and infrastructure. And I think we have a real opportunity along the Wasatch Front to do that. That growth's going to occur along this 30-mile stretch between Provo, basically Utah County, and Box Elder County. And you're bookended by the mountains and the lake. If we don't find a way to move people around more effectively and put, you know, 3 million more tailpipes and all the oceans of parking to accommodate it, the quality of life that we have and that economic engine that runs in part but because of that quality of life, in my opinion, we'll snuff it out and choke that out. And what makes living here so unique won't be a part of it if we don't start finding ways to address it. So this is a start for me. That was more on the soapbox than you probably wanted, but we're very appreciative of this. We think it's going to be great for us.
You know, we've got 1,000 employees in the outdoor industry in Ogden right now and over 40 logos that are represented there, and they demand this type of bike master planning and ways to get through the community that are convenient. And so this is a great start for us, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt. Moving now then to a little further south, we come to a community called North Salt Lake. This particular location is a city that's surrounded by freeway but has very little access to the freeway. Even the surface streets are fairly, they're very well used, but this particular project that we're going to talk about is right here on the intersection of Redwood Road and Center Street. Currently, this facility, as you're coming off of I-15, you have down to one lane, your turning movements. This project is part of a bigger project. It'll address the issues at the intersection. It'll address the geometry as well as the turning movements through this intersection, enabling the implementation of some improvements that I'll let the commissioner address here. But the request for this particular project was a co-request from the Department of Transportation in North Salt Lake. The Department of Transportation identifying this project as a much larger project, but this particular improvement would be almost $8 million. And they've come and they've requested an additional $1 million for or towards this project cost. So the state's got $7 million already. This $1 million would help improve it, so that Transcom recommended that we program $1 million, or that the regional council recommend that $1 million be programmed towards this project. Commissioner, I understand you had the opportunity to...
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to spend a couple minutes to talk about this. Mayor Arvey, unfortunately, was not able to be here today, but as you mentioned, this is really part of a larger project, and the proximity to the I-215 interchange, which is scheduled for some additional work and improvement. This is an opportune time to do this project in conjunction with what's going to go on here at the I-215 interchange. The importance of this area really is the amount and the type of traffic that's flowing through there. With the major distribution centers such as FedEx and Albertsons, and of course the oil refineries in the area, we have over 1,000 semi-trucks moving in and out of this area on a daily basis. And the current configuration with the amount of trucks and of course the growing civilian population, housing in the area, this becomes a very crucial part of Davis County for here in North Salt Lake. There are really only two entrance points down here for North Salt Lake. And, this improvement will make a tremendous impact on traffic flow, which then has an impact, of course, on our air quality, because we won't be waiting as long as on the turns and things of that nature. And then, frankly, even from an economic standpoint, we're working on things that in the area that will really benefit from this type of improvement. So, much needed and we're excited to have.
Thank you, Commissioner. So there's a lot of great projects that are being recommended for the program, but we'll just address one more if that's all right. And that's here in Salt Lake City. This is a particular project that's located right here on 3rd North between 4th and 5th West. This particular location is a location of 5 active rail lines that... In fact, here's a more modern picture as of April of this year. You can see the improvements back from this to this. You can see the improvements that are being constructed here. And then here's a picture of the rail lines. Now, when Salt Lake City made application for this, explaining to us the needs and the concerns that they had in this, it was kind of hard for us to comprehend. So Salt Lake City went ahead and went out and they set up a camera so that they could monitor this particular crossing with the camera. And this first. So, if we had a little popcorn... Long nights, no sleep. Here we go. Here we go. This is about a 16-minute video. There's no loud music in the background. We were careful this time. But I'm going to let you watch for just a few minutes, and then I'm going to jump it forward. And this is available if you want more. But I want you to look at the notes that are coming out. And this is, we're looking east. You can see the Capitol highlighted up there on the hill, right up there in this location. So watch for just a few moments, if you would. Want to leave?
Can see the lights.
Okay, there the gates come down. Another pedestrian decides to cross. Not much of a look and listen. There they go. About 25% of the time the gates are closed and there's no trains that are crossing. Makes it a little frustrating for both motorists and pedestrian traffic. This group of pedestrians crosses while the gates were down.
Probably students going to West High, right?
Very much so. If you look at the timestamp on the upper part. Now, look, this is the peak hour pedestrian crossing on 300 North. So look at your timestamp. Okay? So this is in the afternoon. And here's our counter. The count was conducted on a random weekday in December. I'll mention it was a Thursday, and it was a week before Christmas vacation. Over 100 pedestrians and bicyclists will cross the rail lines during 1 hour. Counts were collected on a cold and snowy Thursday. Give us a temperature here. The highs were 32. Now we're into the afternoon, so we're much lower than that. The lows drop all the way to 13. Now here they start coming. You can see the counter as it goes. This, by the way, back here is a crane movement. I thought it was a defective crossing arm for a little while. So, now as the school is let out. West High, as you'll know, is up here. And so now the students are just starting to come down. Starting to pour through.
The other issue we have right in here is sometimes the commercial trains that are hauling cargo will stop, and the kids can't see the fast UTA trains. So they're crawling through and walking through, and there's very little time and notification of what's on the other side. And that's probably our greatest traumatic fear, is there are five lines and the kids are taking a lot of breath.
We'll jump forward right here. They've actually got pictures of people climbing through the train and going around stop trains. Now, this will also, let me back it up about right there. Let's see how that happens. So, you'll see the pedestrians arrive now. We're into the evening part of the day. And there, as the mayor referenced, the trains that are hooking up. And so the one pedestrian arrived at the top doesn't wait. He just goes ahead and crosses. So this is at 6:30 in the morning, the crossing gates come down, blocking the crossing. Okay, so that pedestrian arrives at 6:41 a.m. and waits for 59 minutes to cross. You didn't notice, or on the other, as the mayor referenced, the trains that passed on the other side. Fortunately, they were waiting. You can see them still standing here, dancing.
Freezing, that's a whole other issue.
Is there regulations that regulate how long they can stop across the roadway?
I think it's like 20 minutes, but you have to, the police officer has to go and catch the engineer in order to sign it.
So at this particular time, there's pedestrians, sorry, Councilman, there's pedestrians on the other side waiting for this. And so this was the part, and then we'll conclude here. So right there where they've highlighted it, right there, watch what sneaks through between the trains. Couldn't even see them coming through there, could you?
It happens a lot, and I appreciate the support we're getting on this particular project. If there's any way to bump it up the list, I would love that, but we truly need some help here, and we've got to fix that as quickly as we can.
So there's a lot more excitement here, but so this particular project is to construct a pedestrian crossing over the rail, and it was requested for $5 million. That is quite a bit for the amount of money that we had, but the tech committee recommended to Transcom that we do what we would normally do towards a pedestrian crossing structure. And that was generally about $2 million, so they went a little higher to $2.5 million towards this project. And the city felt fairly confident that they would be able to identify other resources. But that would be all of the projects that are currently part of the draft STP, the CMAQ, and the TAP funds to go forward. Thank you.
Ben, just one quick question. I had some people ask, and the question always is, when we look at the ratings in each category, it doesn't necessarily mean top projects get funded. So can you just address for a minute the relationship between the rating that is given and how the funding decision is made relative to that paper?
Thank you, Mayor. That's an excellent question. So we rate the projects to enable us to compare apples to apples on particular projects, to give them all at least a level that we can see how this one does in this performance. But other factors that are considered would be what's going on around the community or around the area. For example, this last project we reviewed, the 300 North, was a significant safety project. But by the way we measure safety, you'll look on your chart and it didn't rank very high in safety. And it's because of, partly because of the way it's measured and partly because of other measurements is why this project was recommended. The synergy, the cost of the project, how many projects does that sponsor currently have on the program? How have we equitably distributed the funds across the urban area? You're looking at, we've got $52 million, which sounds like a lot of money, but we go all the way from Brigham City all the way down to Utah County. There's a significant amount of needs, but the funds are not as much as we didn't like. There's also a lot of other factors that would be professional considerations. Mayor, I don't know if I'm, am I deep enough? I can.
I think the point is that the rating is just one factor that is taken into consideration. It's not the determinative factor.
Thank you.
And secondly, there are issues of equitable distribution of the resources over periods of time to make sure that there's just not one area getting all of the funding. That's taken into consideration. Safety issues, because even though we have a good method for scoring, it is not so comprehensive that it covers everything. And so just like with this Third North project, it may have scored low, but it had some elements to it that were critical that just weren't reflected in the rating system. And so you have to have some subjectivity as you're reviewing these projects to make sure that those kinds of elements are taken into account. So I think those are the kinds of things that and I've gotten really good at explaining this since Copland Heights had projects that were really high and didn't get funded. So I've had a lot of opportunity to explain that to my council. So,
and vice versa.
Yeah.
Okay. Taking the Third North.
Yeah.
Question is, for the one in Salt Lake with the train, are you recommending a viaduct, an overpass there? Or
yes.
Is that what you're wanting in?
When you said that pedestrians with bicycles were going to be trains,
they would pick them up and carry them through.
Or they drag them under.
Yeah.
They actually will crawl under the trains that are stopped. A lot of it is kids.
Yeah, and they just don't know how much time they have, right? It's just frightening.
Mayor, I failed to ask you if you wanted to add anything, and I should have played
the
movie.
I've been talking while you're doing your great show here. I think people get the concern, and so we're grateful for the support, and if we can fund them sooner than later, we would love to.
Thank you. All right. Ben, thank you. If there's no other questions for Ben on this particular presentation, the action item that we're taking is to approve what Transcom has recommended on this so that it can go forward for public comment, et cetera, et cetera. Is that correct?
Correct. Become part of the draft program.
Move approval.
Second.
Here we have a motion to approve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that it there? Okay, we'll move on to item 7. Marcy Gainey will give us a brief report on the air quality today.
And I just have to notice that today Mayor Cronin gave you a report for her committee, and she's covered my committee, the Air Quality Committee, and the Fed. You're really busy. Thank you. We didn't have a meeting, but there are some news coming out that I think you need to all be aware of. Tier 3 vehicles will be on the market by this fall. And if you'll look on the window for a sticker, it will give you a smog rating of 8 or higher, and that's what you want. Higher is better. And hope that car buyers will consider that when they buy their vehicle. As some of you know, you've done the tour of Tesoro. It's moving forward with Tier 3 fuel. They'll have that by 2020. And that's fuel that does not contain sulfur. All of the fuel that we're using right now contains sulfur, which is a smog additive that is very dangerous. And recently, Sinclair out of Wyoming is providing low sulfur tier 3 gasoline for the Utah market. And one of the things I would like to see this committee do as soon as this becomes available in any fuel station, any gas station, any place, that we make a big deal about telling people how much better this fuel is, so they'll start shopping for clean air as opposed to shopping for the lowest price.
Is there someone who will know that when they do a public announcement?
No, I don't know. We don't know when Sinclair will start having that fuel out of Wyoming. We don't know when that's going to hit, but I will assure you that this committee will be watching that closely.
It would be great, great putting your newsletters to your citizens.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll be working with AEQ and UCARE on communicating about that also.
And also the Air Quality Committee encourages members to join the Clear the Air Challenge to be held in July. Now, I had done that in the past, and then I thought, well, I've already made all my commitments about changing my trips and all that sort of thing, and they said that doesn't make any difference. You've got to join it again. Use the same commitment. So that's something you might consider. Just looking at your driving habits and changing those just a little bit. You go to the dry cleaners, go also to the grocery store, the veterinarian, and whatever else you were planning to do that day. That saves a lot of gas, and you kind of have to commit the afternoon, but it's easier than making the trip one morning and another afternoon and so on. So you'll be getting information on your internet. We will be sending out information, or the Clear the Air Challenge folks will be sending out email information to you, so you can again do this with your community, talk to your community about joining whatever publications you have in your community, to let people know that they can make a difference. The end of my report.
Thank you, Mayor. Moving to item 8, active transportation, Mayor Caldwell.
I've said quite a bit, so I'll be brief with this one, but the most exciting thing the Active Transportation Committee is working on right now is that our region submitted a Tiger Grant application. I'd like to thank UTA for their lead on that. It includes $28 million specifically included for active transportation, and so this grant will focus on the first and last mile connections to transit within communities across the region. So cross your fingers, if we got that, that would be a huge boost to what we're trying to get accomplished with that, and we've all got our fingers crossed that that might come together for us. Grant decisions for that will be made in August of this year, so we're excited about that, and we appreciate UTA leading out with that and letting us jump on board with that. Yeah. We're in summer now, so we're doing our mobile active transportation tours. If you haven't had a chance to get out and see the infrastructure that other communities have done and to share best practices for what's going on, I'd encourage you to do it. It's a great way to spend a couple hours out of the office, certainly this time of year, so I get to ride my bike and say it's for work, and nobody can complain too much. If you want, the next MAD opportunity will be June 24th in Logan, and we're going to be looking at how to connect recreation using active transportation up there, so that ought to be a great tour. And then I'd like to announce that UDOT has a new active transportation manager. Heidi Goodhart was hired by UDOT to fill that role, and we look forward to working with her, and certainly appreciate Evelyn Tudenton for everything that she has done. And that's about it for us.
Thank you, Mayor.
I just want to add that at the LEAD conference in September, we'll be hosting one of those mobile tours, and so Commissioner and County Councilman, you guys are welcome, and Carlton as well, you're welcome to join the LEAD conference for a day, so you can come participate in that mobile tour as part of our Planners Day.
Good, thank you. Andrew?
All right. Hold on to your hats. I got 5 items. I'm going to go through them really quick. Item number 1.
How much time?
Is it fast enough?
I don't know. I'm not making any promises, but you're already making me go longer. So economic development and transportation, they relate very closely to each other. We have a committee, the Economic Development District. Lanise Davenport staffs that committee. And we've been working on what are the priorities for those connections. And you have in front of you a handout that talks about 3 key strategies for integrating economic development with transportation and land use, coordinating our transportation investments with economic clusters, coordinating transportation investments to improve access to opportunity, and ensuring fiscal sustainability through efficient growth and infrastructure investments. We're weaving these things through the work that we do with you, with our partners at UDOT and UTA. Item one. Item two, Point of the Mountain. That area at the connection of southern Salt Lake County and northern Utah County is the epicenter of growth in our state. There's a lot going on there. You know that the legislature mandated the creation of a Point of the Mountain Commission. Mayor Dolan is going to serve on that commission, made up of legislators, local elected officials, business leaders, and others. And the legislation explicitly mandates coordination between the commission and the transportation agencies, WFRC, MAG, UDOT, UTA. We're looking forward to working with that commission and taking advantage of the opportunities that exist in that area, and truthfully, not making mistakes that we then will suffer from over the course of decades to come. That was two. Item three, another area, very important, the Northwest Quadrant in Salt Lake City. We know that the prison is moving there, but it's not just about the prison. Much more can happen there. What's the vision for that area? What happens in that area is going to matter so much to the city, to the county, to the state. Mayor Biskupski and Salt Lake County are leading out on a visioning effort for that area, working with the state to figure out how do we deal with that quadrant, what are the opportunities that we can take advantage of in that area. Item four is, is, I lost a piece of paper. That's an important, item four, okay, audible. Item four is the what Mayor Dolan mentioned already, the Wasatch Trust 2050 Consortium Active Transportation and Health Summit. Muriel is just going to take a minute to tell us a little bit more about that. You have some information. Muriel.
Okay, well, don't I get 2 minutes since we were item five?
Cut into your time already.
Oh, darn it. Okay. So you have in front of you some materials. We've been talking about this for a while, and the event is upon us soon. So the Wasatch Choice 2050 Consortium and Active Transportation and Health Summit, Wednesday, June 29th. Please come. It'll be, and you have the draft agenda in front of you. So it's a day packed with best practices, information sharing, networking opportunities. Two main objectives for the day: the refresh of the regional vision, which Ted touched on earlier. So we will get feedback from participants, engage in interactive sessions, mobile tour opportunities. That's one objective. The second objective is, you know, this conversation that we've been having about community design and how community design can affect healthy lifestyles and active living. So those two themes are woven throughout the day. Please come, and we also ask that if you're in a position to help sponsor the event, we would welcome that.
It's a great event for our region, and we're just so proud that our region has been identified by this national organization to be the host for their 50th annual conference. We've got a lot of great stuff to show and learn from others, so that's going to be great. Item five is some personnel. We talked about staff at the beginning of the meeting, but I'm going to close out with a little more on our staff. We are having some staff turnover. It's a natural thing. We don't always like it when it happens, but it happens. Two of our great longtime staff members are going to be retiring soon. Where are they? Pam. Well, Pam is right at the table here, has been here for 10 years. She's going to be retiring in September. And Renee, where is Renee? Renee, right here, is going to be, after 18 years, is going to be retiring in August. We also had a few other employees, one who left to spend more time with her kids, and another employee who left to do other things. Fine. We're sad to see Pam and Renee retiring. We'll have more to say about them before they retire. But while they are irreplaceable, we are excited to have some new employees that are with us already, so we can have a very smooth transition in working with you. Amber Gonzalez, Amber, right back here. Just stand up for a second. So as I say your names, just stand up and stay standing. Amber Gonzalez is coming in to take over for Renee's functions, accounting and human resources. Very important, being very careful with the taxpayer dollars, trying to be as efficient as we can. Andrea Pearson, next to Amber, is going to be, has the challenging job of helping me. So if she reaches out to you, please be nice to her and say yes whenever she asks you anything.
Heather McLaughlin Kolb is where? Heather, oh, there, everybody's all lined up. Heather is coming on as a communication specialist to help make sure that we are communicating effectively with you and our partners and our community members. Megan, where's Megan? Megan, okay, is a super intern who has been working on the TLC program. She just graduated, she got your master's. Almost, well, we're sort of counting on it, it's going to happen, in planning at the University of Utah, but she is now coming on full-time to work with Julia on the TLC program. And we've got three interns, outstanding interns who are here, are going to work with us during the summer. Gustavo Da Silva, working on economics. Where's Gustavo? What? All right, well then, cancel his internship. He's going to be working on economic development. David Floyd, working with our GIS group and doing sidewalk inventories and geographic information systems data. And Roman Huerta, who's also going to be working with our GIS group, working on city green infrastructure. So, whoo, a lot of great folks to help us out. At 4 o'clock, I'm done. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Any other items that brought before
we adjourn?
Second. We have a motion. Everyone in favor?
Aye. How long is that? 6 minutes?
Almost 7. Just a 5-second shot. It's actually short for you.
Get out of here. No, it isn't.
I want to know how you make it.